And welcome to Coast, and welcome to our final hour of open lines here during the middle of the week. Looking forward to it, talking with you when we come right back. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Welcome back to Open Lines. Let's go to the phones. Bill in Seattle, first-time caller. Welcome to the show. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Will.
There you are.
Yeah, you kind of took me by surprise there.
We sneak up on people sometimes.
Yeah.
I remember I had a call once, Bill. The guy was in the bathroom, and the poor guy had been on hold for an hour. So just when I go to him, he's on the toilet. I mean,
I'm right there. 15
timing.
Minutes.
Yeah, you're pretty darn close. What's going on?
I've been a listener of Coast to Coast since 1994.
Wow.
I was chasing two 14-year-old runaway girls across Washington and Oregon, and I happened to trip over Art Bell. I've been listening ever since.
Thank you.
This is the first time I've ever called, Bo.
Thank you. What got you to call?
I'm an Uber driver now.
Oh, okay, great. I've got an Uber commercial coming up pretty soon.
I had an interesting trip here about a month ago. I drive in Seattle, and I was assigned a call between 14th and 15th and Howell Avenue on Capitol Hill in Seattle.
Okay.
This is, just a dark little street, no lights between a couple big old apartment buildings. And so I just pulled up in between them, put on my four-way flashers, which is kind of a signal, that you're sitting there waiting for somebody.
Yeah.
And the back door behind the driver's seat opened. And I turned just enough to catch a glimpse of a girl getting in behind me. And she's wearing a hooded cloak. And I see a blonde strand of hair hanging out of it as she gets in.
And she's supposed to be your rider, right?
Well, yeah, she's my rider, And usually you say hello and their name, and they say hello and your name, and everybody's confirmed.
And off you go.
Yeah. Some reason or not, I didn't that night.
You didn't?
I didn't.
Okay.
And I don't remember the name on the screen. But if she got in the car, and an Uber driver never knows where they're going till they push the start button.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I push the start button, and it's an address down in May Valley, which is south of Bellevue on the east side of Lake Washington from Seattle.
Which the rider the rider puts that in on the app when they're when they're looking for the pickup. The ride. Okay.
And it's about a 30-35 minute ride. And I push the start button, that comes up. And I always ask people how they go on, try to engage them in some talk. And I says, how's your night going? She doesn't answer. Okay, I turn on the radio, and I've got it on a modern soft rock station, which most of the kids like.
Yeah.
And we hit the highway, and I'm going across the lake on I-90. It's about a half-hour trip. This girl starts singing.
Singing?
With the radio.
All right.
It's like somebody had sent in her playlist. Every song was made for her.
And I bet she was a good singer, too.
The entire half-hour trip, she never missed a beat. It was pitch perfect. Her voice was angelic. It was like nothing I'd never heard before. I mean, if anybody put her to vinyl, she'd be all over the place.
She'd be that good. Wow.
She was that good. And she's singing, and I'm going across Lake Washington. It's raining like hell. Windshield wipers are slapping in time with the music. And, geez. This was actually an experience for me.
And she is, bellowing these songs out, I guess, right?
Yeah, she's not kind of under her voice, but she's actually singing with the music, and it's perfect.
Is she aware that you're there driving around, or is she in her own little world singing?
She has to be.
Yeah.
But, she got in behind me, and the way I have my mirror adjusted, If their head is laying against the window in the back seat, I cannot see them.
You can't see that. Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, we make this trip, and it's almost like I'm in a trance by the time I'm over on the east side, you know, because it's just, you know, it's a moving experience, to say the least. And then about a half mile before we get to where
you're going,
drop her off.
Yeah.
She stops singing.
Just abruptly?
Well, and then the song happens.
The song ends, she stops.
It picks her back up.
All right.
The next song wouldn't have fit her, I don't think. You know, although I can't swear, she could sing with anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But I got to the address, and it's an old house. Looks like it hadn't been lived in years.
Lights on or lights on or off?
Huh?
With the lights
There's
on?
No lights in the house.
No lights at all. Okay. This is
and
weird.
I asked her, I said, are you sure this is the right address? She doesn't answer me.
Oh!
And I turn, and I look in the back seat. There's nobody there.
Oh, come on, Billy. Nobody?
The car is empty. If somebody had got out, the dome light would have came on.
What about the fare? Somebody had to summon you through the app, right?
Okay. I admit, at this point, I'm shook.
I would guess so.
I turn off the application. I go home.
You're done for the night. You're done.
I'm done.
Yeah.
I couldn't have handled anything. I'm shook.
And obviously, you don't get paid for this, right?
Well, theoretically, you get paid for your ride, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the next day, they always send you a after a shift or after a turn of ride.
You get a breakdown of your night.
Yeah, it's like a ride log.
Yeah.
I look at it the next day. The ride never happened.
Oh.
Now,
you're scaring me, Bill.
Now, you know, I mean, at this point, I'm thinking, I am totally frigging insane. I'm 65 years. Maybe this is a 40-year-old acid flashback.
I don't know. That's an amazing story, Bill. She's gone. That's going to go into one of the history books. What a story, Tom.
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding?
Love
Great
it.
Story. So, text from Frank in Austin. I'm curious, do you play a musical instrument?
I do not play a musical instrument. When I was younger, I tried to play the clarinet. That didn't work. I then tried to play the guitar. That didn't work. I do play around with a harmonica.
I was
every
just going to say, actually, you do.
You've heard
because
me.
I've
and I'm not
play.
Bad. I'm not bad
not
with
bad.
That. But,
Carry
you know,
tune.
I'm not like, you know.
Who's a famous harmonica player? That's interesting. How about a tweet?
Oh, Bob Dylan's a good harmonica player.
Oh, you know what? Very true.
You know, but.
How about a tweet from Carrie Ann, our friend Carrie Ann? If your life was a movie, what genre would it be?
If my life were a movie, what genre would it be?
Comedy, drama? What?
No, it would be drama. Would not be drama. It would be time travel movie.
That's not a genre.
No, I guess not.
Sci-fi, that's what you want to
say.
It
would not be a comedy. It would not be a thriller. It would be nothing.
Good question, huh? Yeah.
I don't know what kind of movie.
I think it would be a sci-fi. Science fiction.
Maybe a romance movie. Who knows?
Romance.
You never know. I just, you know, the fun life of living, you know, with your family and stuff. Oh, well, that's it.
Good
Thanks,
job.
Tom. John in Lafayette, Louisiana. Hello, John. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hello.
Hi.
Glad to talk to you again.
Thank you.
I sent you two letters on George at coasttocoastam.com. Did you read them?
Oh, you mean emails?
Yeah.
Yeah, not letters. No, I get very few letters these days. What was, just refresh my memory, though. What did you send me?
Well, it was...
I'm not placing your name with the emails. That's my point.
Oh, okay. It was about my innovation, and you did say
you've got the perpetual motion machine.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Had you got a chance to read them?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, cool.
You're gonna.
I didn't get no confirmation whatsoever that you did. So.
Well, I don't know how you set up your emails, because a lot of people set it up where if I look at it, you know that I've looked at it. But that's on your end, not mine.
That.
But interesting take. I'm not going to talk with you at length about it tonight because it's open lines, but we should chat.
You might have a gag order on talking about that kind of stuff, too, so I don't know.
No, I don't. I can talk about anything. Anything. But have you...
I've contacted Popular Science.
I was going to say, has anybody tried to buy this from you?
I don't want to sell it.
No, but have they tried to contact you for it?
No, nobody's contacted me.
They haven't. Okay.
No, I've just been twiddling my thumbs, waiting and waiting and waiting, and nothing's happening.
How did you come up with this? Because since the beginning of time, nobody's been able to put together a perpetual motion machine.
Well, the thing is the scientists put it out there that perpetual motion machines were impossible. He got banned on the thing for where you got to get patents.
Mm-hmm.
It'd been totally blocked off. So nobody could put those stuff out there. Yeah. I just wanted to prove it exists.
What kind of material do you use?
For that, I'd probably use plastic. With plastic going up on both sides to make sure that none of the water gets out.
How much does it cost to make?
Well, I don't know how much the generators would cost, but... imagine quite a bit. I'm poor. I can't make no money.
Gosh, somebody would buy it.
With my wife, my house is falling apart.
Assuming it works, some big company would buy this.
Well, you'd think so, but like I said, I'm more interested in getting it out there so I can prove that perpetual motion machines do work. I have like five other perpetual motion machines.
Are they? They're all different. They're all different.
Yeah, but it is. I realized this when I was a kid.
But the same principle. They work on the same principle, don't they?
Sort of. But anyway, back in 1974, I came up with a different kind of electrical motor because I took a look at how electrical motors were made.
What did you do for a living when you were working?
I've done all kinds of things.
I mean, are you a handyman, electrician? What'd you do?
Well, best of all, I fix things.
A handyman, then, right?
Well, I worked one time at a paper mill thing over here. And what they had me doing was fixing those machines that... buff the floors.
Yeah, I've seen those. I like those are kind of
neat
machines.
Got that job, and I didn't have any notion on how those machines were made, but I could look at a machine, and I can tell you what's in it.
Well, that's a pretty good gift. You're probably an engineer in a past life or something like that, but you're pretty remarkable for somebody who has had no training in those fields, let me tell you. Let's go to Tom in the Bronx, east of the Rockies. Hi, Tom. Hey, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey.
I'd like to say that prior to World War II, after the Nazis took charge of Germany, somehow, some way, they used political influences, and they wound up building four towns in Brazil. There were four towns, and they looked like they were in Bavaria, these towns.
Mm-hmm.
The buildings were like in Bavaria. Have you ever heard of a story like that?
Is this where Hitler fled to?
Now, wait a minute. Now, I don't want to get into that for the moment. That'll detract from what I'm saying.
All right.
After...
I'm jumping ahead.
But they hit these towns. which in Brazil, these towns were nondescript. They actually had radio stations that communicated to Nazi submarines during World War II.
From Brazil.
In Brazil.
Yeah.
They, anyway, after World War II, Washington, D.C. and London got wind of these towns.
How big were they?
Oh, they were sizable.
Like a little city?
I was sworn to secrecy years ago by an individual that was charged with, military man that was charged with going into Brazil and with a whole entourage of individuals, you know, a safari.
Mm-hmm.
And there were no satellites at that time, you know. So they were going through these massive jungles, Brazilian jungles, different sections of them, and they eventually found these towns.
Were they close together, these four towns?
No, they were according to what I was told, he was long retired by then. They found these towns, and they weren't that, no, they had to search for them. I don't know how many miles apart they were, but they were not together. And they must have been near a river, though, or something,
yeah,
to communicate to Nazi subs in the ocean, or they were near coasts or something. Maybe the coast of Brazil.
Where were these towns now?
Wait a minute. Now, after World War II, this military guy had made believe he was a big millionaire from the United States. And he was hunting for big jungle cats. He was supposedly wanted trophies.
He was really hunting for these towns.
Yeah. Now, I figured out who could have been with him, who could have had the safari. Do you ever remember a program called Wild Cargo? Not Wild Kingdom, Wild Cargo, that was on TV 11 back in, they were on, like, local stations.
I don't. Hold on for a second, Tom. I want you to wrap up that story, but do so when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast Open Lines. We're going to have another series of tweets or texts from Tom, but let's go back to Tom in the Bronx for this story. So we're picking up. We're in Brazil.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
They're searching for these towns, and they began to find them.
What did they want to do with them if they found them?
Here's what happened. The United States and England had a stake in finding these towns. And what happened was all he did was find the towns, and they went back and they reported, because he was a post in Panama. And they used him as this individual that was multimillionaire that wanted trophies, you know, of these big jungle cats.
Mm-hmm.
So they found the towns. He went back and he reported. Now, knowing the U.S. government the way we know them, they obviously sent down representatives from here, and they probably summoned the mayors and other public officials of these towns in a secret meeting. And they said, look, the mustache can't help you anymore, the spaghetti man can't, and the Japanese guard can't do that either. So these individuals, probably the mayors and other officials, had said, look, all we want to do is get our families out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, okay. And you, knowing the U.S. government the way we know them, they probably made a deal and brought them here.
Brought in the thinkers, at least.
And they said, well, what do you want? They said, we want all the layout of the town. We want the water, gas, electric lines, and everything else. They then proceeded to send down, individuals to blow these towns sky high.
Why? Why get rid of them?
This was revenge, I suppose. England and Washington D.C. wanted revenge.
Just want them all wiped out.
And they, as individuals, slept in that town because the individuals that got out of these places didn't inform the other people that this was going on.
Now, were these Germans, Tom, that fled there after the war,
no,
or had they been living
there before the war?
They were. And roughly how many people?
Every town, this man was German, Jewish himself.
How many people per town do you think were living there?
Thousands.
Okay.
And they looked at these towns, he looked at the signs as he went into these towns, and he could read every sign because his family was of German origin originally. They came from Germany, so he was able to read German. As a kid, they came here prior to World
War. All right, well, get to the good stuff.
Prior to that, to World War II, naturally, they came here a good while before that, and so he was able to read German, but he made believe he couldn't read it. And he was going through the town, and every sign was German in the town. And anyway, they sent down demolition experts, and they just blew the only thing left of these towns to the foundation, maybe if they could find them. But this was very, he was kept to secrecy for many years. This happened in the 1950s sometime. Because he was a career soldier, and he stayed in the Army after World War II.
All right, now explain to me the significance of these towns.
They were probably used as relief centers for the Nazi subs that would probably come in. You know what made me think of the story yesterday?
When the guy was telling me about that sub in Brazil?
Yeah, well, it's quite possible. Maybe he found out some of the story.
See, I had heard that Hitler fled to Brazil or Argentina and that he was there.
But in other words, but there's always stories about him going to Argentina because you said one night that they actually built him a house in Argentina.
That's right, a mansion, absolutely. And that I still think, my gut tells me, Hitler did not commit suicide with Eva Braun. I think he escaped with her. And they probably went to some area close to Brazil or Argentina. Tom, final text or tweet for the night.
It will be a text from Carla in Arizona. How do you feel about the new health bill, and will it really be better than Obamacare?
Well, I don't think there really is a new health bill yet. I think that's still up in arms. But
they're talking a little bit about
it. I think it'll be better, ultimately, when they get it fixed.
I agree.
My concern is I think people with pre-existing conditions should be taken care of. You cannot deny them help.
100%. Let's go with a text from Michael in Desert Hot Springs.
Last one. Here we go.
He says, it seems like the state of ufology has become stagnant. So where do you see it in 5 years?
I don't think it's stagnant. There's still some great stories. As a matter of fact, next week we have Lynn Kitai coming up on the show to talk about the anniversary of the Phoenix Lights. The problem with ufology and investigations is it generally doesn't have a conclusion, and that is what people get antsy about. When we have stories, as you well know, Tom, we want a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Mm-hmm.
With UFOs, you don't have that end. You just don't have it.
Not yet.
So it goes.
But man, I miss Roger Lear.
I miss Roger Lear, and I miss all those people. John Mack, Bud Hopkins, just great people.
We'll be doing a Dearly Departed show again pretty soon.
Oh, we are? Okay, yeah. Good. It's been a while since we did that. Okay, thanks. Enjoy your weekend, by the way, Tom. You're going to be here tomorrow, aren't you?
I'll be here.
All right, good. Let's go to Eric in Shelbyville, Indiana. Good morning, Eric. Thanks for calling. Eric? Well, I'm not going to thank you for calling anymore. Michael's in Chesterfield, Missouri. Hey, Michael, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Hey, George. Thanks for the show.
Thank you. What's going on?
I had a question about Dr. Wallach, actually. He talks tons about gluten, and you and I have talked before in the past about the aluminum, the barium, the strontium is in the air, and everything that goes into our soils and gets uptaked into our plants. And I'm just wondering why he doesn't talk too much about the pesticides. I know that's not your question, but I'm just kind of hoping that many people out there will think about not only the chemtrails that are in the sky, but also what's being uptaken into their soils and into their plants.
Oh, absolutely. Well, he mentioned a little bit about that today when he was talking about the civilizations that use burned ashes. And he talked about the fact that they're much healthier because they're not out there with pesticides and things like that. But the next time he's on, I'll tell him to be more specific about that.
Well, that's not necessary. But, maybe he could mention it next time and do a little research.
Sure.
I asked about Marjorie Welker, about the aluminum and the barium, and she said fungi was very good for the soil and that natural bacteria could get rid of some of those things that are in our skies.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll do that. Let's take some more calls here as the clock continues to tick. We go to Long Island, New York. Simon's with us. Hello, Simon. My grandson's name is Simon. Not many people named Simon anymore.
Sir, I have a story that will top anyone on the planet. I'm 87 years old.
Well, thank you for calling, and the best to you. Tell me the story.
I've cheated death 8 times in my life. I had cancer 4 times. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I almost died in 85 from an inflamed pancreas. I went cold turkey. I suffered from bipolar depression for 13 years and attempted suicide.
Oh, boy.
And wait a second. December 2013, I underwent 8 electric shock treatments to the brain. I am a new individual. I was attacked in Prospect Park, Brooklyn. I was in a coma for 2 days and came out of it. I was in, the last thing happened in 2010. I totaled a car. I had a Lincoln. I had $30,000 damage. I had to be extricated from the car and suffered a bruise to my right knee. And I am writing for Facebook, Amazon.com, yesterday, today, and tomorrow, my gift from God. I also met Donald Trump. A playmate of mine was Buddy Hackett, famous comedian in Brooklyn. I was in the Army during the Korean War, and my buddy was Vic Damone.
Great singer.
Oh, yeah. He was my buddy. I pulled guard duty for him. He gave me $5. And when he was invited to the White House to sing for Harry Truman and his family one weekend. Yeah. Now, I got out of the service, and in the year 2010, I used to go to Atlantic City quite a bit. I retired after 48 years, 20 years as a cost accountant, and 28 years as a letter carrier. And anyhow, I tried to get tickets at Trump Plaza Casino to see the show, but they were sold out. I wrote Donald Trump a letter, and he rewarded me with 2 reservations to see Vic Damone in his farewell appearance, and 2 cocktails each.
How about that?
I tweet Donald Trump, and I wrote a poem about him. I also write poetry, and it might be hanging in the White House. Yep.
That's cool.
I could go on.
So he remembers you, Simon. President Trump remembers you?
Yes. I also tweet Ivanka. Oh, yeah. On Facebook. And also...
You're in your 80s and you're on Facebook?
Yeah.
That's good for you.
I have 2,000 friends across the planet. Yep. And I am busy 24/7. I hate to sleep because my mind is unbelievable. I remember conversations that I had in life daily with people. And the things that happened to me. My father had a business in Manhattan, wholesale fruit, and I used to drive a horse and wagon delivering fruit in Manhattan. How about that?
God, you've done it all, Simon.
Oh, yeah.
So let me ask you a question, because you're in your 80s. You've seen it all. What do you think of things happening right now in the country?
Oh, terrible. Here's the kicker. When I was in Zucker Hospital for my electric shock treatments, I had a very surreal dream. I was seated at a table with God Almighty and the Angel of Death. We were playing a game of cards, and the stakes were my life. I lost, and the Angel of Death got up behind me and was going to encompass me in a shroud. And God Almighty, in a thunderous voice, said, "Stop. I have a message for this man to deliver to all the leaders and of the world. Shape up or ship out."
I love that. Simon, I love that. Hey, you call us whenever you want, and you keep in touch with us. Pretty remarkable. Let's take a few more calls. Laura's in Cincinnati. Hello, Laura. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi there.
I have a question about turmeric.
Turmeric, yeah, sure. I'll try to help you.
Do you think it's safe to give it to dogs?
Do I think it's safe to give it to dogs? Now, that's an interesting take. It depends on the amount, I would guess.
Right.
Because it doesn't hurt a human at all, and it's great for inflammation. I think it's safe. I believe that. But why don't you call your vet just to be on the safe side?
Yeah, well, we did already start her on.
I don't think it'll hurt, but I'm not a veterinarian.
Yeah, because she's got fatty tumors, kind of big.
How old is she?
She's going to be 10.
Yes, that's still young for a dog.
Yeah. And
keep fighting.
We've had dogs with cancer before.
How long have you been giving her the turmeric, and how does she seem to be reacting with it?
She loves food. We stick it in her food, and she doesn't even notice. And it doesn't seem to bother her stomach or anything. It's been about 4 months.
Well, that's the way to trick them. But, yeah, I don't think it'll hurt, but definitely call your vet and tell them. I'm sure they know what the turmeric is as that spice. RJ is there in Dandridge, Tennessee, first-time caller. Hello, RJ.
Good morning, Mr. Norrie. How are you?
I'm fine, sir, and I hope you are, too.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to say hey, and I tell you what, you're a great friend to a lot of us newspaper carriers out there during the night.
Thank you. Thank you, and I'm glad.
Yeah, you had a caller, I guess it was about an hour ago, and was mentioning the Ecclesiastes 9:5.
Yes.
And I understand what he was going for, because you've been talking a lot the past several days about the whole idea of the spirits, you know, and where they go when they die, and whether they go somewhere when they die.
Sure.
That verse, that particular verse he quoted, was not actually referring to the... it was referring to spiritual, not living dead versus alive, because you have spiritual death and spiritual life, and you have physical death and physical life.
So really, it wasn't like reincarnation or anything like that.
Well, this particular verse is what I'm talking about. It's referring to the difference between being spiritually dead and spiritual life. And there's a lot of parallels in the Bible that are meant to help man understand the whole spiritual dead and spiritual alive, by using physical death and physical life to help explain the spiritual side.
Very good. How'd you learn all this? Bible reader, aren't you?
Yes, sir. Well, I love the Bible.
That's a good book. I read it, but I've never been an expert in the scriptures in terms of, you know, the passages. So if you throw a number at me, I have no idea what that is at all. Peter in Carlsbad, California. Just have just about a minute, Pete. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, George?
Great, Peter.
Excuse me. To get your overall take on, you know, you seem like a great, well-rounded person, open to pretty much everything, kind of like myself. Do you believe in the greater beyond the picture, that everything relates and intertwines, that's going on, good and evil, light and dark.
Oh, absolutely. I have said repeatedly on this program that we are involved in the wireless internet of life and that everything is intertwined. I mean, you're spot on. Everything is connected. People, you know, when we have the subconscious minds working and people, you know, run into somebody they were thinking about, everything is absolutely connected. That's probably a program all by itself. Stick around again tomorrow. We've got another series of great programs, including Subliminal Messaging with Eldon Taylor for you here on Coast to Coast AM. And don't forget to watch our TV show when you have time at beyondbelief.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.